Hello, and welcome to Contact High. This week, Mishkanite Susanna Darwin celebrated her 60th birthday and wanted nothing more than to learn how to chant Torah and offer a drash at Mishkan. So, as we turned our attention to the section of Torah describing the building of the Mishkan, the traveling tabernacle the Israelites built in the desert throughout their wanderings, we invited Susanna to share her observations and insights. And in doing that, she brought all of us a little more awe and wonder. We could all use a little more awe and wonder. So, Mazel Tov, and take it away, Susanna.
So just to review, in this text, the biblical character, God, continues with detailed, minutely, obsessively detailed instructions to Moses on Mount Sinai. And here's what he says. Now, for the Mishkan, which is the traveling sanctuary, make 10 swaths of cloth. You're going to weave fine linen with blue, purple, and scarlet wool and have artisans add cherub designs. Each swath of cloth is 42 feet long by 7 feet. You align the swaths of cloth together 5 by 5. Next, you create 50 blue loops along the far edge of one cloth in the first set, and then do the same thing along the edge of the far cloth in the second set. You position them so that they are opposite one another. Then make 50 gold clasps and attach the cloths to each other with the clasps so that the Mishkan may be one whole. The instructions then continue about the outer tents and the paneling for the interior. So let's try and imagine our way into how it felt to have spent centuries under a regime of forced labor in a place, Egypt, that was at least as ubiquitously polytheistic as the U.S. is Christian. So consider the imagination and charisma it would have taken to bring thousands into the Sinai desert and remind them, convince them, that actually one single force is responsible for birth, death, a bountiful harvest, victory in war, success in love, rather than a god for each. Some of us now might name that force causality or physics, but that's not my point. My point is that in this text, God, the biblical character, appears as someone intently concerned with a dwelling place, which is purpose number one of the Mishkan. The section I read only addresses the awnings. Then we hear about the outer tents made of cashmere and hides, acacia wood paneling for the interior, and later gold, silver, copper furniture and other accoutrements, the linens demarcating the courtyard. Now imagine it's you living in the desert, with your family and your flocks and whatever else you were able to schlep out of Egypt. Some of us here today can tell you from experience at Burning Man that deserts are a big, hot, dusty mess, and it does not take long for everything to wind up the color of oatmeal. So how does it feel when you gather all together and you discover this colorful, soaring structure, the Mishkan? Even if some of us today might find the design a bit much, you might feel dazzlement. You'd probably feel awe. And speaking of gifts, what a gift awe is. Awe can stop you short at the Pritzker Pavilion when it's lit up at night and Sonny Rollins' saxophone is wailing. Awe can blow you away at sunset over the Gulf of Mexico or the Gulf of Naples. A moon landing, giant sequoias, in Yosemite, the Western Wall, a chip off the Berlin Wall, a birth, Barbara Jordan's opening statement at Nixon's House impeachment hearings. All those things can swell your heart, make you glad to be alive. So maybe this is an appeal to the human predilection for awe. Build me a splendid dwelling place. Let's make room for awe. Rabbi Heschel says that awe enables us to perceive in the world intimations of the divine, to sense in small things the beginning of infinite significance, to sense the ultimate in the common and the simple, to feel in the rush of the passing the stillness of the eternal. So, of course, the Mishkan's awnings aren't just simple woven pieces of cloth. The text says that skilled workers are to apply images of cherubs, too. Keruvim are fiery figures, not the cute baby putti you see on the ceilings of basilicas. The ones on these awnings have counterparts inside the Mishkan, on the ark itself, in the inner sanctum. Hammered from gold, contributed by the Israelites, the two cherubim inside are face-to-face on the ark's lid, panim el panim, like Moses face-to-face with God on Mount Sinai. The voice of God is to emanate from between these two gold adornments. So we get this redemption or conversion of gold from a taboo object, the golden calf, into a conduit for the divine voice, a case of cosmic alchemy. The scholar Aviva Gottlieb Zornberg suggests that the golden calf was actually a necessary antecedent to the Mishkan, and that its presence in the story lends a dynamic complexity to the Mishkan's meaning by leaving a warning against idolatry embedded in it. Physical details aside, what stands out in this text is the phrase at the very end of what I read, V'haya ha-mishkan echad, so the Mishkan may be one whole. Besides creating a single architectural element, a portable one by design, making one whole of the Mishkan's parts could be symbolic of many unifying impulses, the unity of divinity, as in Adonai Echad, of us and the universal energy, here represented by God, the biblical character, of the Jewish people, of humanity, of the world. Like, what if there is no us and them? What if there's only one big us? Which brings me to how it feels doing this today in the midst of all this. I can't be blithe or indifferent about any of it. The carnage in the south of Israel on October 7th, the depravity of hostage taking and rape and torture as war strategies, or enabling a terrorist organization while hamstringing a fragile political one and engaging in the brutal illogic of turning Gaza into Grozny in order to eradicate terrorists. But I won't be resigned either. I choose to make good trouble on the side of peace, on the side of equity and unity, which is something I've been trying to do for 40 years. You could take the symbolism of making the Mishkan one whole as inspiration towards a more unified individual, too. Nerdy 12-year-old me was fascinated by the languages that Tolkien made up for Lord of the Rings, and that's probably how I wound up a Russian major. Though if I could, I might like to hand back that part of my bachelor's. Rest in peace, Navalny. Slava Ukraini. Other ways of writing and speaking can seem like a secret code if you don't know the language. And there was a code-cracking element to learning to chant these verses from Torah. But learning these verses from Torah was also a way to play in a part of myself that's energetic and focused and that feels like a gift. It also feels like a gift to call myself a Jew by embrace. And today I'm honoring my 27-year-old self, still nerdy, who wound up meeting with three different rabbis over the course of years before converting. The first rabbi and I offended each other basically on sight. The second rabbi was kind but candid about his congregant's attitudes about gay people. By the time I got to the third rabbi, I'd done a lot of reading and thinking and studying and feeling welcome and loved among the mishpacha. Rabbi Peter Noble just flipped through his day planner and asked, "So, for the mikvah, how's Tuesday?" May his memory be for blessing. And speaking of blessings, I want to throw a kiss to my lifelong friend, Jennifer Morin Castle, who's here today from Dallas with son the elder, Sam. Jenna and I got to be pals as three-year-olds, remember this, at the JCC Nursery School in Nashville, Tennessee. Jenna and Sam and their family are a big part of why I'm here today. My conversion happened in 1991, which is more than half my life ago. You can do the math. Surely it's no coincidence that I started law school within days of converting. I just heard how that sounds. Tzedek, tzedek, tirdof. Justice, justice shall you pursue. As in, make good trouble. But finding a congregation that I fit and that fit me did not happen until 2014. The first time I attended a service at Mishkan Chicago, I remember thinking, this feels like home. Welcome home. Funny thing is, welcome home is the customary greeting at Burning Man. And within hours that Rosh Hashanah, I had a hunch that I should not ask the rabbi, have you ever been to Burning Man? But what year did you go to Burning Man? 2006 was her immediate reply. Now I'm a few days short of 60, or a few hours, depending on the calendar, because I turned 60 tonight on the Hebrew calendar, which is so cool. Still a nerd. Still making good trouble, or trying to, fighting for equity and democracy in Florida, alongside my wife, my beautiful Amy. Last spring, when I was wondering, how should I mark this birthday? Chanting Torah was the immediate answer, as it might be. And chanting Torah at Mishkan Chicago has been a huge gift. As Lizzie mentioned, the name of the Torah section is Truma, which means an offering or a contribution. So I might take issue with gift, though I know the literature uses the word gift. But a community like this one depends on contributions of time and energy and attention in addition to money. The gift is in the opportunities that we create, that this community sustains in the establishment of a space where we can show up both in the mundane and in the cosmic senses. Now, returning to the verses that I read, the story says that the Mishkan is a place that God, the biblical character, asks for to dwell among us, to have an immediate intimacy, to exist in community with humans, not on some magic mountain, not up in the sky, and kind of sweetly in an abode, and a portable one so as to come with us whither we goest, even displaying a particular aesthetic. Other interpretations suggest that the point is to have the divine reside within each of us, or that the portability of the Mishkan indicates that divinity is everywhere, not just in one spot. To me, the likeliest place to discover divinity is between humans. Together, we have the capacity to create things far greater than any one individual. As Mishkan's rabbis reminded us during the High Holy Days, we are each of us a fracking miracle. Awesome to behold. What one of us can do is staggering. What we can achieve together is nothing short of world conjuring. I imagine us building a Mishkan roomy enough to house all of us. But why couldn't that just be the globe itself? How about we treat this planet like it's a place for connection and reflection and creation, not desecration? A place to dwell happily and sing and dance with joy. V'haya ha-mishkan echad. Like that. Shabbat shalom.
Shabbat Replay is a production of Mishkan Chicago. Our theme music was composed and performed by Kalman Strauss. You can always see where and when our next service will be on our calendar. There's a link in the show notes. And if you appreciated the program, please rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. I know you've heard it before, but it really does help. On behalf of Team Mishkan, thank you for listening.